This is MergerCast by Strategy And, a podcast exploring the world of mergers, acquisitions, and restructurings. Strategy And, part of the PwC network.
Welcome to MergerCast. I'm Jane Searle. Today, we're discussing megadeals and their impact in transforming the entertainment, media, and communications sector. We'll look at challenges to remaining competitive, the types of deals that are prevalent, and key elements of successful integration. Discussing this topic with me is John Boxall, Deals Director at Strategy And, PwC's strategy consulting business, Laurie Bistis, Deals Director at PwC, and Paul Kennedy, Deals Partner at PwC. Now, John, in recent years, we've seen a lot of change in the entertainment, media, and communications sector. There's been a blurring of the traditional media value chain between content providers, packages, and distributors, and we've seen new market entrants from the tech sector changing the meaning of distribution. What's driving this change?
Well, Jane, essentially you're seeing major changes in both technology and consumer behaviour. From a technology point of view, high-speed data, new connected devices such as smartphones and tablets enable access to content almost anywhere. A vast amount of data is being created from digital interactions, mobile devices, increasing wearables as well. And at the same time, greater storage, analytics capabilities, machine learning all mean this data can be processed and used to customize both the content and the advertising experience. Meanwhile, consumers themselves are changing how they consume content, the type of content they want and when they want it. Not happy with paying for a predetermined bundle of entertainment, they're looking for standout content, a customized experience, and on-demand access.
And there's been interesting M&A activity, particularly with respect to consolidation, which seems to be the nature of most mega deals. Aside from consolidation, what other deal types are you seeing?
Just on consolidation initially, consolidation has been the biggest motive behind the mega deals in EMC. These deal types accounted for more than two-thirds of mega deal value over the last 5 years. You've seen it particularly in the communications and cable subsectors. A good example is Charter's acquisitions of Time Warner Cable and Bright House. What I think you're seeing in this sector is that cord cutting is driving top-line pressure for these players, while at the same time they're facing increased content costs and greater investment in high-speed data. Consolidation gives them economies of scale, gives them buying power, and it gives them significant cost savings. Another quarter of the EMC mega deals in terms of value have been players buying new capabilities, or capability extension deals, as we call them. This has been behind almost all the deals in advertising and marketing, as players need to build their technology capabilities in this area. Verizon AOL is probably the most obvious example in this space. But you've also seen it in other subsectors, so you've seen LinkedIn buying Lynda and Facebook are buying WhatsApp. And then finally, in 2016, there's been a new trend, deals about content. The new EMC landscape makes must-have content so important. So you've seen Lionsgate buying Starz, NBCU and DreamWorks, and now, of course, AT&T and Time Warner.
Now, Laurie, once the deal is done, a successful integration is one of the biggest challenges. How do companies get off on the right foot to ensure they harness the value of the deal?
It really starts with being clear about the goals of the transaction and then assigning the right leadership and integration team structure to ensure that accountability to those goals. What we see, media companies often tend to focus their deal rationale on revenue opportunities. You know, what can they achieve with the IP and the content they've acquired? Then on the communication side, there's a lot of consolidation happening, as John alluded to, and often that results in achieving cost-cutting synergies as the goal of the transaction across the back office, meaning IT, finance and accounting, facilities, and doing so without losing focus on what's the new go-to-market position of the combined company? How do you preserve revenue? So selecting that right leader, typically from one of the business units of the acquiring company, it's got to be somebody that can really articulate these goals and drive the success. But sometimes that's challenging because no one person may have the wherewithal to understand the breadth of what has to be done. So we see companies address that in a couple ways. One, it's about assigning the right leadership across functions, so directly underneath the leader to drive, say, finance, accounting, IT, sales goals. And number two, specifically when a company is being acquired that may not be core to the acquiring company, and it's a new type of business, we see companies adopt a, what we call a two-hat approach in the integration leadership. And what that means is you take a key leader from the acquired company and you have that person lockstep with the integration leader, articulating the goals, driving the activities, and, you know, ensuring cultural buy-in from the acquired company in doing so. And that also achieves much of what you need to in terms of preserving the people and retaining the value of the company you've acquired in a lot of cases by seeing that leader up there articulating these goals. And with that whole leadership structure in place and the goals well articulated, as critical as that is, it's all for naught if the communication's not there. And I'll just end with that. The communication is key, and that can really make or break your success in integration. Over-communicate, have a plan, be very clear about what you're doing and how you're driving to these results.
And Paul, it makes sense that getting the people aspect right is the first step. But what else should companies focus on to achieve success?
The acquisition, as we all know, will have financial objectives. And it's essential to quickly understand the opportunities that drive value, the cost to achieve, and the path to meeting the value goals. So thinking about it, there are two main sources of value, cost and revenue synergies. For cost synergies, each business area or functional team will want to identify their significant cost savings opportunities, build a business case to justify the effort, and then pull together a detailed project plan to ensure that the cost can be removed by the anticipated dates. We often also see the most complex cost savings associated with technology. For example, over the years, technical changes in this sector in areas such as digital workflow, mobile and video delivery platforms, set-top boxes, they've all led to multiple disparate internal technologies and workflows. So as a result, to achieve cost synergies through process and technology simplification, a more strategic transformation may be needed in order to address those technology architecture and workflow optimization needs to achieve the ultimate cost savings. Often, also, an integration is a good catalyst to tackle those transformational initiatives. For revenue synergies, we find that the most successful companies use the same level of planning and rigor for revenue synergies as they would cost synergies. Now, companies that have a successful integration are often those that have done it before, and in turn, they have developed a playbook for success. So it's important that you don't just take a one-size-fits-all approach to integration, as we've seen that all deals are different. So it's critical that the playbook is tailored to each integration based on those deal priorities, and in some cases, taking a fresh approach. So for example, if we look at Verizon's two recent acquisitions of AOL and then XO Communications, both of those needed to adjust their playbook from a network migration focus and also to a data and ad tech focus based on the type of transaction. But ultimately, at the end of the day, a successful integration is managed as a business process, thinking about focusing on the project management, the reporting, the accountability to meet deadlines, and as Laurie had mentioned, communication.
And finally, Paul, looking forward, where is this industry going? What's next?
Well, it's very exciting as we look forward over the next 3 to 5 years. We've talked about convergence across EMC. We continue to believe as a firm that what's next is a continued convergence of the entertainment, media, and communications sector with the technology sector. And we're already seeing that with the proposed AT&T Time Warner mega deal that's been announced, as well as the potential Twitter buyers and many other deals. The trend that we're seeing over the last several years with the consolidation deals will likely continue, but ultimately we think that it will slow as regulatory approval becomes more challenging, and also with the convergence across the EMC and tech sectors, this will pave the way for more capability extensions and also innovation-focused deals in the next 3 to 5 years, in our view. Finally, content deals will also continue to power mega deals, as differentiated content will always be a strategic consideration, even as the distribution channels and the technology platforms continue to change. We'll leave you with the thought that careful planning and execution will be key in continuing transformation of this sector, and we're very excited to see what lies ahead.
That concludes our episode of MergerCast. Thank you to our guests John Boxall, Laurie Bistis, and Paul Kennedy. And thank you for listening to MergerCast by Strategy And, as we explore the world of mergers, acquisitions, and restructures.
This has been MergerCast by StrategyAnd. For more information on StrategyAnd's service offerings in mergers and restructurings, please visit strategyand.pwc.com/mergers. StrategyAnd, part of the PwC network.